Today our message comes from Matthew 18, 15 through 17. If another believer sins against you, go privately and point out the offense. If the other person listens and confesses it, you have won that person back. But if you are unsuccessful, take one or two others with you and go back again so that everything you say may be confirmed by two or three witnesses. If the person still won't accept, refuses to listen, take your case to the church. Then if he or she won't accept the church's decision, treat that person as a pagan or as a corrupt tax collector. Our next message comes from Ephesians 6, 1 through 3. Dear brothers and sisters, if another believer is overcome by some sin, you who are godly should gently and humbly help that person back into the right path. And be careful not to fall into the same temptation yourself. Share each other's burdens, and in this way obey the law of Christ. If you think you are too important to help someone, you are only fooling yourself. You are not that important. The word of God for the people of God.
Lord, may the words of our mouth be acceptable in your sight. Amen. Today we're going to have a little bit of a lesson, as well as, I wouldn't say preaching, but pointing out a fact that we're always not perfect. And I think as the material that our pastor does, that he gives us very good lessons, and he does some really tough words. You know, I remember when he talked about sex, and that was a tough one to talk to a congregation about. And then he talked about cussing, and that was another tough one. Now I think I will leave. He has given me the assignment to give you a tough lesson as such. And it starts off by talking about a tongue. Now, of all the things that are in our head is the tongue, and the tongue has no bones in it. It's just muscle. So if you take out the tongue, what happens? You can talk, but nobody can understand you. My mother had a sore on her tongue, and so she went to the dentist, who was a good friend of ours, because, you know, we spent a lot of money with the dentist. And so Dave looks at her mouth, and he says, "Where's the phone?" And he goes over and he calls Ann Arbor right away. And so he said, "I have a lady here who has cancer of the tongue. What can you do for her?" And so they said, "We'll send her over." So we went over, and she had the exam. And then we went over to have the operation. We were there at 8 o'clock in the morning, and we left at 9 o'clock at night, exhausted, not knowing what went on. And what they did was they cut out her tongue. What? They cut out her tongue. Now, that's something medieval, isn't it? But then they fashioned from her back the muscles to make it so that she could talk. I didn't believe it. And sure enough, they stitched in a little bit bigger than what the tongue was, stitched it in, and they said, okay, she'll work with a physical a speech therapist for a period of time to get used to this new tongue. And sure enough, in about 3 weeks, I could understand her fine. Not everybody in the family could understand her, but I could understand what she wanted. She would live with us. And so then she continued to improve, and then she said, "I want to go to my house." And she lived over in Waterford. And so we said, "Well, you can go back to your house, but we'd like to have one of the kids to be with you in case you need." And so one of my children went over with her, and she continued to improve until later on she didn't make it. But the point is that she had a sharp tongue, and there's nothing worse than a woman's tongue. Now, when the pastor gave me this outline for a talk, I thought, boy, am I sticking my neck out on this one. There is nothing as sharp as a woman's tongue. And you're absolutely true. But in this portion, that's just the beginning, a woman's tongue or a tongue. So the part that cuts through you like a hot knife through butter is the tongue. If you really want to, you can tear somebody apart with the tongue. You can feel lower than low, or you can feel higher than high. Wounds from a sincere friend are better than many kisses from the enemy. The old adage, hold your friends with you, but hold your enemy closer to you. When you have, and I'm going to go through the definition of some of the words that I'll be using later on. The next one is confrontation. A confrontation is a meeting between two friends. It's not an adversarial meeting, but it's a meeting between two friends. And they're pursuing something in order to resolve a issue. And the other one is godliness. We are all in the state of godliness. And if we can solve our problems, then we can be in the state of godliness. Because God is the one that's going to use us to carry off his plans. The other one is, obviously, you know, we have confrontations. I remember sports. And at one time when I grew up, we had three baseball teams in New York in the boundary. We had the Dodgers, we had the Giants, and we had that Bronx Bomber. Oh, the Yankees. The Yankees. Now, as I grew up in a very mixed environment, by that I mean we had a lot of immigrants that came over, and so these were second generation children that were from the original immigrants. The immigrants had settled in New York City. But the ones that we had were second. And so I was subjected to all these immigrants as I grew up and went to school. I didn't go to school with just white kids and all high class. I lived in an area that was 30 miles north of New York City. Very urban area. And it was also, it had a long history because it had been settled back in the Revolution. In the Revolution, mind you, one of the first parts of the country to be settled. It was the breadbasket of the United States at the time. 80% of the time when somebody thinks they should confront somebody, they're wrong. Only 20% ever get to that point. Now, I'm going to be doing a little reading. I'm going to do the crutch. And I hope you'll bear with me, because I don't want to miss a point. And I'm going to go back to the time of David. Okay? Now, David was a prophet. Who was these prophets floating around? Well, first of all, we go back in the Old Testament. We find in Genesis that the people listened for God to give them direction. But God gave them direction, but they didn't pay attention to God. They did as they wanted to. So they said, well, look, everybody else has got kings. Why don't we have kings? So he said, you want kings? I'll give you kings. I'll give you a prophet, and the prophet will designate the kings for you. And they said, okay, all right. So now on comes this guy, David. David was the last of the boys in the family. And you know the Bible story. Who did David kill? Goliath. That's right. He killed Goliath. And so God said, I'm going to make David a king, but he's also going to be a prophet ahead of time. Now, a prophet takes what God wants to tell somebody or some group. And so he tells the prophet what he wants to tell him. So the prophet now is very careful. He can't go against God, but he can't also rile up the people that he has to talk to or the person that he's got to talk to. So as a result, what does he do? He modifies the point that he's trying to make. And he tries to make it so he puts a little sugar on the confrontation. So it's not quite as stiff as it might be. And so we have three parts here. We have the part of God's correction, God's character. We have arise in peace. And then we have how do we take care of it after that. Now I'm going into 2 Samuel chapter 11 for those of you who have their Bibles, would like to follow along the way. And I'm going to be reading from the Message by Eugene Peterson. I want it in the language, not the these and the thous, that you'll understand. There was a war. The war between the Israelites and the Amalekites. And as it was in those areas, you know, everybody wanted land and profit. And so I'm going to have a war with you, and I go through and wipe half of you out, and I leave a few of the people left to recover. And then later on, they come after me. And so this was here's what happened here. And the Amalekites were the bad guys. And so I'm not very good on the pronunciation, so be patient with me, okay? So David goes, he goes to the chief of his military group that's going to fight the Amalekites, and he elects Lob as being the general in charge. And he's not going to do the fighting. He's going to be back at the castle, back where he wants to be, so that, you know, if things go wrong, he can get out of town fast. He don't want to be up in the front lines. And remember, in those days, they had the long poles, about 11-foot poles on the end. They made those into pruning spears. And then they had the shields, and they had the swords. And the swords were short swords. They were the stabbing swords. They weren't the chopping zones. So they tried to stab you to death. So that's the environment we're talking about. So the Amalekites marched in a battle formation on the city gates. Now, if you look at the way the cities were established, they had a wall around them. But to gain entrance into the city, you had to go through not one gate, but two gates. And this is what the Romans did. The first gates were the outer gates. So you came up and you knocked on the door and said, I want to get into the city. I want to sell my produce in the city. And so then they would come in through the first door, and the Romans would come out and inspect because they were afraid they might be somebody going to attack them. So if he says everything's okay, then the main doors have been closed now. He'll open the inner doors, and the inner doors, he can go into the city. Then he come out, he does the same thing. He doesn't want anybody to be stealing. And so when they come out, the guards are at the first gate, and they inspect what he's coming out. Then he goes into the chamber, they inspect him again, and then he goes out and on his way. So there was a double check along the way. Not a bad idea. Not too bad. I thought that was pretty good, because sometimes you get people coming and going when things really get busy. When Job and the soldiers moved in to fight the Amalekites, They ran off in full retreat. They got beaten. David's soldiers got beaten. So they only fought. They only fought during certain times of the year. And the rest of the time, they had to go home and till the land. And so they were like on contract. And so then in the fall, they would come back and they'd try to kill each other. In simple terms, that's the way it was. So now, David, who was the king, had a terraced apartment or house. And so he's up on the top deck where the king would be, of course. You know, you got to be on top of anything that goes on. And so he looks out and hears this beautiful lady. And she's taking a bath. So he does the worst of worst. He looks over there, peeks over the edge. Man, she's beautiful. I'd like to get to know her better. And so he sends his guards to go get this woman, and her name was Bathsheba. Bathsheba. I've often wondered where that name came from. So what happens? He invites Bathsheba in, and they have something to eat, something to drink, and one things lead to another, and she spends the night, and her husband is at war. Now, her husband's name is Uriah. Well, now I got a problem. 2 months later, Bathsheba says, I'm pregnant. What's David going to do? So David says, So he's going to send for Uriah. And Uriah's to come home and have a little R&R. That's rest and recreation. So he brings him home and he says, oh, you're one of my trusted soldiers and captains. Have something to drink and take a bath and go home to your wife. And Uriah says, oh, thank you very much, King. I'll do that. And he, of course, he didn't know what was going on, but everybody in the castle knew what was going on in where the king lived. So anyhow, instead of Uriah going home to his wife, he spends the night on the steps for the entrance to the castle, to the gate where the temple is. Well, David wonders about this one. So he invites him back again the next day. He says, take a bath, and be all sweetened up and go home to your wife. And again, Uriah spent the time on the steps of the temple. And the third night, Uriah did the same thing. Daniel invited him in to eat, and he came in to eat. And then he said, take a bath. And he said, how can I take a bath when all my comrades are out in the field? They're fighting. When the leader, Loeb, is who's out there, how can you do that? I said, I should be out there with my men. He said, don't worry about it. Here, have another drink. And so he proceeds to get him drunk. And with that, he sends him down on the steps, and he spends the night. When he sobers up, out to the field he goes, out to the battlefield he goes. And so he is out there. But before he leaves, David sticks an envelope, a message, into his tunic, and he says to him, now give this to Loeb, the general. You can't open it. It's got a seal on it. And so he said, yes, sir, King, I'll do that. And so he goes back to the battlefield, and he goes to the general, and he says, the king has sent you a message here. And so Loeb looks at the message. I don't like this too well, but we're going to have to fight some more. He said, the king says to put your out in the front of the army. And then pull back when you've engaged the enemy. And he's going to be all alone, and he's going to be killed. So Daniel is setting up Uriah that he's going to be out there. Sure enough, that's what happens. And he gets killed. So a messenger was sent back to the king saying, well, how did the battle go? And the messenger says, man, it was a tough one. You know what he talks about, all about the battle, and they lost 50-some-odd soldiers, and David says, now, that's too bad. You know, there's going to be people that are going to get killed in warfare. He says, that's just the name of the game. So he wasn't too happy, but he wasn't too concerned. And then just the messenger, as he goes out the door, he says, oh, by the way, Uriah got killed. Oh, now it comes. Here's the bad news. What am I going to do now? So word came back to Bathsheba that she had lost her husband. Now, because she was now a widow, David could marry her. And so David did. She was with child about 2 months, and she had a girl. The oldest one was a girl. She had 2 children. So Bathsheba then was the mother of the boy who was Solomon, and the girl, they don't even mention the girl. It's unfortunate, but the Bible never talks about the girl. So now, the prophet. Nathan is the prophet. He's not selling hot dogs today. Nathan's hot dogs? I thought I'd sure get a smirk out of that one. And here's Nathan. Nathan is the prophet. Now the prophet takes the message that God wants to send to a person or a group, and it comes in, and then he works the message over, and then he goes and presents what God is not happy about or what God wants. So Nathan was set up to take the message to David that God was not particularly happy with what he'd done. Nathan was a prophet, you know, and David was one of the best kings ever, but the confrontation happened, and in Samuel 12, it is right for something really bad had gone in David's life. And David had committed a major sin by having an adulterous affair with Bathsheba. Now you say, well, yeah, he was the king. He could do as he wanted to. But Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus has all the rules and regulations that you had to live by. All the rules and regulations, and it was that you didn't mess around with somebody's wife. Okay, so here was it. So David had sinned against God because God set up all these rules. But Nathan had to present this to the king. How'd you like to stand in front of your boss and say, I'm going to criticize you? Not very much. And I learned long ago when I was in the service that you criticize in private and also proclaim, announce in public. And so he was not in public. So Nathan says, King David, we've got to talk. God's talked to me, and we got to talk. So he says, okay, and let me check my register here. And okay, well, I guess we can talk right now. So he said, come on in. So he goes in, and he shuts the door behind him. And instead of saying directly that David, God is not happy with you, he talks in a parable. And the parable involves a lamb. And of course, they had lots and lots of sheep around, and so it was not unusual to have a lamb. But he talks about the story. There was a rich man, and he had lots of sheep, and he had livestock, and he had all kinds of riches. He was a rich man. But with it, his neighbor was a poor man. And the poor man just had all he could do to buy a lamb. But the lamb was a ewe. That's a female, for some of you that may not know. And so here's this two people. And all of a sudden, one day, along comes some travelers, and he's going to go see the rich man. And the rich man goes over to the poor man and saying, "I want your ewe." Now, this ewe was more of a pet than it actually had been out there and reproducing and like we would normally consider a farm animal. I mean, he had eaten with the owner. He drank from the same cup that the owner was. He'd slept with him. I can't believe that, but he slept with him, and so he was a pet. He really had more than just numbers. So the rich man takes the ewe, and he slaughters the ewe, and he presents that to his visitors. Now he says to David, "Who do you think is the bad guy here? Oh, let me tell you, I'm going to get after that rich man. Why, I'll make him supply four times what he took." So he's got to provide four sheep. Nathan says, "Yeah?" "Yeah," and he says, "I'm going to put him in prison. And then I might even cut his head off." "Yeah." And Nathan turns back and David said, "And who is this guy, this rich guy?" And he says, "You." And he points to David. "You're the one that has broken the laws. You're the one that has deceived the people. You broke all the laws." David slumps back and Nathan takes his exit. He knows when he wants to get out of the situation. So he goes out the door and he leaves David. Then he comes back and he talks to David and he says, "I've been instructed to tell you that because you broke the rules, you broke the law, you're going to lose all your household in the temple. You're going to go from riches to rags. Your family will be all just taking everything away from you. We're going to take the wives away from you that you have and the concubines. So you just accept Bathsheba." And so as a result, David was stuck. He was stuck. He had no place to go. He knew that he had disobeyed God, and so as a result, that's okay. So as a result, what was he going to do? Well, he realized that they had to have develop the art of confrontation. And so there are five steps in the art of confrontation. The first step is the one that follows God's leadership, and that's where Nathan took David aside and told him how he had broken the law. In the private meeting, which is the second one. And the third one is prepare to tactfully share your thoughts with the person. And so Nathan had shared his thoughts. He devised a soliloquy. He devised where he could talk to the king, but he didn't have to worry about names and places. It was general. And then state the truth. And that's what Nathan did. He stated the truth. At the end, Nathan shuts up. And the other, pardon me, and then the last one is offer grace and support. Talk about the problem. And now the other side of the coin is you as a presenter, or the presenter presents that side, but the receiver should listen, not lose their temper. So when you do that, it's always best not to do it right away, but to let it cool off. And I like the term cool off. Give you an example. I went to vote. Typical, I always vote. I go all the way out to Mount Zion's church to vote. This isn't your precinct anymore. What? I'm in 7. I've always voted here. No, you're going to have to move, and you're going to have to go down to the other location, which is where the new recreation area is, and you're going to have to go all the way down. So I've got to travel all the way down Dixie Highway to get down Mabee Road and get on Dixie Highway and then go up and take White Lake Road and all around. Man, it took me about a half an hour to get there, and it's 5 o'clock when all the traffic is up. How am I going to get there in time? And then when I get there, I knew where the place was. When I get there, all the handicap stickers where you're going to park, they're all filled up. And I look inside, and I don't see anybody that's inside except the precinct workers. The old temperature is starting to rise a little bit, you know? Where am I going to put this car? So I drive over to the parking lot on the other side, and I say, I'll be damned if I'm going to park way over there. That's just too long for me. I just can't make it. So I go back around, and I say, the heck with it. I said in a little different way. And so I pulled in, and I said, phooey. I got my stroller here, my handy-duty stroller, and now I go to vote. And I get up, and I go to pull the door. The door is so stiff, you can't open it. You can't open it at all. So I go to the next door. I do the same thing. Finally, I find a door that I could open. Now I've got this door open, and I got my foot against the door, and I've got my handy walker that I got to get through the doorway to get inside. By then, the temperature was rising rapidly, okay? So finally, I get into the polls. Now you know how I feel, yeah. So I throw my receipt down from going to Zion, and I said, here, I'm already registered. Oh, and then she was very calm, and she got me on the rolls. Oh, yes, Mr. Green, we have you here. That's fine. And now you go to the next, went to the next guy. Then when I got the ballot, there's no place to sit down, and the ballot's this long, as you know. Where am I going to sit down and put all these blocks in there and read what they're saying? I always read what they say because I don't trust nobody. Oh, see, Jan, I do read that stuff. Then I said, no, no. Okay. But there wasn't any chairs to sit in. There wasn't any chair. All of them was stand up to fill out the ballot. There was no provisions for a handicapped person to go and make out his ballot. So finally, I find one chair at the end of the row, and about 20 stands there to sign your ballot. And I sit down there, and I go take my time, and I go through everyone, check my list that I had already done preliminary, so on and so forth. And I was not happy. So then I was like up to here, and I was ready to really take somebody to task. But then I remember reading about Nathan and how he could make good out of something that was bad. So I said, now is the time to do what you've been preaching. So I went home and I let it cool. Now, obviously, this week, I will write some recommendations to the people that they consider and try out some of these things. But in the meantime, I've got my barrel of comments because I went back through the whole year and checked all the newspapers, and there isn't a single thing in the newspaper that says your precinct has been changed and the location that it's been changed to. Now that's my ace in the hole, so to speak. So we shall see. But here again, 80% does 20%, 80% that's going to holler or cause a problem. Only 20% actually does. And I'm probably in that 20% rank. So the outcome of this whole thing is that David still retains his kingship. And he's a great king. The boy dies. God says that the boy is going to die, and sure enough, David spends his nights at the crib where the boy is, and the boy eventually dies, and then a year later, the daughter dies. God was true to what he said he was going to do. So David has no children until the children come from Bathsheba. And so there are two children there, and one of them is Solomon. And of course, we know the great Solomon, the one of the best people, the kings that they ever had. I think I've said enough. And so I would leave you with this, that when you have a time in which you're going to have a time in which you're going to have a difference of opinion with somebody, take a little breather. Remember I said, criticize in private, but glorifies in public. Under God's leadership, he will show you the way. And as our pastor said, when you hit your thumb, don't use the last word. Don't take his name in vain. Just say, ouch. Okay, and that's where David was.